You are listening to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for March 1989. Hello, I'm Fred Vobey. Let's step right up the front page of DX News, the magazine of the National Radio Club. Paul Swearingen and Mike Nitter will be in just a few seconds with some news from the front pages of DX News Magazine. I'd like to make mention that we have several new members now joining the DX Audio Service. We'd like to say welcome aboard. And, of course, a quick reminder to those of you that listen to this program via returnable tape. Be sure your tapes are back to us by the 20th of the month for the next edition of the DX Audio Service. From Jonathan Marks and Radio Netherlands comes word that Media Network on March the 2nd will take a look at time measurement. David Rosenthal will visit the famous WWV in Fort Collins, Colorado, and they'll also catch up on Pacific News with DXer Arthur Cushion. Then on March the 9th, they'll examine the growth of local radio in West Germany. Wolfgang Schultz in Hamburg traces the development of private radio in the Federal Republic, and they'll also expect some clandestine radio news from Mr. John Campbell. That's all on Media Network on Radio Netherlands. Like to give you a few frequencies for Radio Netherlands broadcasts. For those of you in North America, these are some frequencies which I checked out and found to be very sufficient for listening. At 10:30 UTC, the Australian and Caribbean service is heard on a frequency of 9505 and 6020. The Eastern North American service is on at 0230 UTC on frequencies of 9895, 9590, 6165, and 6020. Then to Western North America at 0530 UTC on 9715 and 6165. And those are some of the frequencies for Media Network and also for Radio Netherlands. Now here's Paul Swearingen with a look at the front page of DX News Magazine.
Hi, this is Paul Swearingen for the DX Audio Service. Well, Jerry Starr recently noticed that his AM switch passed his 200th issue, and perhaps it's time that we also recognize the efforts of several individuals who are currently active in the National Radio Club and who have been for over a decade. Now, Chuck Hutton has been typing up IDXD since the May 11, 1977 issue, which also marked the first issue from the Louisville Publishing Committee, of which Dick Turax, our current treasurer, was also a member. Ron Muthko's tenure as membership chairman goes back to the days of the New Jersey Publishing Committee, whose chairman, Russ Edmond, has revived a question-and-answer column. Ken Chatterton has quietly continued distributing NRC reprints since his work with the NJPC, and current editors Bill Hale and John Bowker have written various columns and remained active over the years. Others, including some whom I've surely forgotten, continue to contribute to the success of the National Radio Club in other ways, from sending in clippings and logos to encouraging new members in their DX endeavors. Now, you don't have to have your name in each issue to contribute to the success of the National Radio Club, you know. Now, inasmuch as we've taken our look back at the past, I find it necessary to look forward to the future. Now, I'm sure that those of you who do subscribe to DX News have noticed a few changes, including the flag, which has run unchanged since September 20, 1976. Now, I've upgraded the flag and some column headings and other things to try to modernize DX News. The membership is holding steady, and that's good. Now, editors and others will be expected to follow certain page widths and other things. So DX News is improving in its appearance. As I mentioned last week, I appreciate the comments from those of you who have offered suggestions for the improvement of DX News, and I hope you'll continue. A few samples. Ernie Cooper hopes to see the personality of the members return to musings as well as DX tips, and adds, doesn't it seem sort of odd that the one subject one isn't supposed to mention in musings is DX? And Walt Breville says, I hope some mention of FM will be allowed in musings and articles of the future. Well, mention of FM shortwave TV has always been quite acceptable, especially noteworthy catches. Now, the IRCA forums are not allowed to include DX, but the National Radio Club has always allowed mention of DX catches and anything else which might be of use to a DXer. However, some columns such as Bandscan and Pete Kemp's Radio Roundup have been spun off from musings as perhaps DX Time Machine and other articles of historical interest inspired by Ernie's mothball memories. Part of my plan in the improvement of DX News is to keep it organic and more useful to members, partly to fill in for missing columns. Now, a club which has been devoted to the radio market, Radiophiles, has not been out of bulletin since last summer, regretfully. I believe there's the need for all this information to reach radio hobbyists, not of all of whom are hardcore broadcast band DXers. Therefore, I've increased the coverage of the radio industry, individual stations, history, and so forth, in an effort to broaden the appeal of DX News and attract new members. But if the contributions to the DX columns increased dramatically, say to 10 year-ago levels, when Chuck was typing up IDXDs whose pages numbered in double digits, then you'd see DX first and programming second. I would also hope that the National Radio Club is projecting a professional-level image now, and that we would be proud for our magazine to grace the coffee tables of kings and presidents, such as noted radio amateur King Hussein, who has had DXN in his possession. The days of bombs and bumper stickers at conventions are over, and in spite of Bill Hale's request in the issue number 18, so are the sophomoric April Fool's issues, which I feel wasted your dues money on half-baked satire and disguised personal attacks. Both the publisher and I agreed last September that the 1988 April Fool's issue was the last, and don't waste your time in trying to persuade me of it. So that's about it now. This is Paul Swearingen for the DX Audio Service.
Thank you very much, Paul. And now here's Mike Nitter with some interesting information concerning how you can pay for your subscription to the DX Audio Service. Mike?
Visa and MasterCard credit card orders. Due to popular demand, the National Radio Club is proud to announce that, with the cooperation of a local business, the National Radio Club can now accept Visa, MasterCard credit card orders. You may use your credit card for NRC products and NRC subscriptions, including those to the DX Audio Service. To place a credit card order, you can call by phone 608-423-4159 between 7 and 11 p.m. Eastern Local Time. No collect calls will be accepted. Calling outside this time period will not necessarily guarantee you that someone will take your call in person. And no, we will not return calls to take your order. By mail, when ordering NRC products or subscriptions, send your credit card order to NRC Headquarters, P.O. Box 24, Cambridge, Wisconsin, 53523-0024, and not through the normal channels. This will ensure timely processing of your credit card order. So if you've got an order for a product, instead of sending it to Mansville, you send it to Cambridge. Credit card information that we need is we need to know your card type, whether it's Visa or MasterCard, the card number, expiration date, the name as it appears on the card, and an evening telephone number, just in case we have a question or two for you. And Wisconsin residents must add the appropriate state and county sales tax.
Thank you very much, Mike. And hopefully, if we have enough time on this edition of the DX Audio Service, we'll name off some of the fantastic products you can order from the NRC Publication Center. And not all of them are books. There's some nice items there that you can buy from the NRC Publication Center. Well, sitting right across from me here at the Sheetrock announce booth is a very stately-looking gentleman with his big book. And, John, what do you got there in the book?
Well, Fred, I'm still going through this terrific AM log. I'm over in the section now that has the radio stations organized by city and state. You know, it's you can order it lots of different ways, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, and it's real easy to read this time, which is nice. And it's so easy to read that I decided, what the heck? You know, it's a question that I asked myself 30 years ago, and I guess the answer hasn't changed in 30 or 40 years at least. And that is, you wonder what cities have radio stations that spell their name. And we'll do the W's this month, and then next month we'll do the K's. But the question of the month is, what cities in the United States, beginning with the letter W, have radio stations that totally, fully, and completely spell their name? And for instance, I would not accept, well, it's gone now, but in York, Pennsylvania, there was W-O-R-K. Now, that wouldn't count, obviously, because York is Y-O-R-K. And you get other cities where you start to spell the city name, but that doesn't count. I want the full city name spelled by the call letters of a station in that city. Very important. Okay? That's the trivia question for this month, Fred.
Good trivia question there, John, and I guess that leaves out WIMA. Of course, I don't know too many people here in Lima that know the difference between a W and an L anyways. Oh, they all with it. Let's kick right into Jerry Starr with a look at the AM switch column. Jerry?
Hi, everybody. Jerry Starr here with another edition of AM Switch from the pages of the National Radio Club's DX News for the DX Audio Service. We have a rather abbreviated AM Switch section on this month's tape. Only three AM Switches to wander through. We are going to be leaving the cold and snow of Ohio and heading toward the sunny beaches of Daytona, Florida for a couple weeks, so we're doing this tape a little bit early. Consequently, we're just a little short on information from what we normally have. Add that to the fact that the FCC has had a number of those government vacations, you know, the ones that they get and nobody else does. Well, that also has resulted in some very short work weeks at the FCC in this last month, including getting Martin Luther King Day off on Monday and the following Friday getting Inauguration Day off. So the information flow from the FCC has been slow in coming. So we have three shorties for you. Let's start with edition number 200, call letter changes, 680 WDDE, Newburgh, Kentucky. The new call is WJYL. On 960 WJIZ, Albany, Georgia, changes to WJYZ. 1060, news station in Templeton, California, will be KXER. On 1240, WLCF, Eustis, Florida, becomes WWLB. 1270 KZLR Pine Bluff, Arkansas changes to KPBA. On 1290 KVOL Big Lake, Texas becomes KWGN. 1340 WPLJ Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania becomes WYOM. 1410 KKUL in Park Rose, Oregon becomes KBNP. 1510 WJCO Jackson, Michigan becomes WHBT. And on 1590 WDHN Honesdale, Pennsylvania becomes WWCC. Application for a new station? There was one on 1030 in Cortaro, Arizona, 50,000 day, 1,000 night, U4. Grant for a new station? Also just one on 1600 in Brewer, Maine, 5,000 day and night, antenna will be U3. One meaningful application, 1180 KCLP, Claude, Texas, wants to move their city of license about 10 miles to the northwest to Amarillo, Texas. Grants to existing facilities, only one that really meant anything, on 1540 KZAL in McDonough, Georgia, is moving to 1410 kilohertz. There'll be 1,000 watts D1. Glancing down into otherness on 920 WGST, Atlanta, Georgia, they have sold this frequency along with the transmitting facilities to a religious group to facilitate their move to 640, where WGST will take over the facilities of WPBD, the new 640 station in Atlanta. That move is expected to happen soon. As a matter of fact, by the time you get this tape, it may have already happened, and maybe our friend Dana down there in the greater Atlanta area can let us know when that change actually takes place. From 1370 KSHY, Cheyenne, Wyoming, several people have reported this station had moved to its new frequency of 1530 kilohertz. Hasn't happened yet. There may have been some brief testing on 1530, but monitoring reports at places where this station is a daytime regular, as recently as 2 days ago, say that KSHY is still on 1370. 1400 WWXX, Alpharetta, Georgia. This station was silent. Then it came back on the air and then went silent again on Christmas Day. In the middle of January, they returned to the air once again, and they are running a business news format, which seems to be quite popular with some of the AM stations in larger markets. So far, the station has remained on the air, but it seems to be one of those ones that comes and goes. We'll keep an eye on it for you. In addition number 201, only one call letter change. That's on 1300. KWKW, Pasadena, California, changes to KAZN. Actually, what happened here, if you don't recall from several months ago, KWKW on 1300 bought the facility in Los Angeles on 1330 and is moving their programming and their call letter to 1330. They have sold the 1300 Pasadena facility to a new organization, which will reactivate that under the call of KAZN. One new station was granted in addition to 201. That's on 1030 in Oviedo, Florida. 25,000 day, 500 night. The antenna will be U4. Looking at our 201 otherness, lots of items of interest on 650 KORL, Honolulu, Hawaii. This station was reported to be back on the air. It is not. This station is still silent, according to several people who have monitored in Hawaii within the last week. On 670 WTNN, Farragut, Tennessee, news station is on the air. On 840, application for a news station in Marina, California. That application has been denied. You can scratch that out of your log. 1430 WEMG, Knoxville, Tennessee. This station is silent. As a matter of fact, the tower was torn down and sold to a scrap iron dealer for the grand sum of $100. Doesn't sound like this one will be back soon. 1440 KXAM, Helotes, Texas. A station which was only on the air about 6 months, went off the air, and now their license has been canceled. They have been unsuccessful in selling the station to a new owner, so they return the license to the FCC. 1440 KXAM, short life is over. You can cross that off your log, too. 1450 WEYZ, Erie, Pennsylvania. The people who own this station went to auction and bought the facilities of Crosstown WRIE 1330 in Erie. They are expected to move their call and their programming to 1330 very soon. The 1450 facility has been sold to Pennsylvania State University, so you can expect a return of programming there and also a new call letter coming up. 1490 WMRB, Greenville, South Carolina, silent station is back on the air. 1530 KGTN, Georgetown, Texas, silent station back on the air. 1550 WORI, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, this station is silent. And on 1600 WWBR, Harriman, Tennessee, another silent station. Finally, we move on to edition number 202, and this is where the information really starts to get slim. No call letter changes were released for this week from the FCC. Applications and grants for new stations, there were none. Couple applications from existing stations of interest on 720 WGCR in Brevard, North Carolina, would like to change their city of license to Pisgah Forest, North Carolina. Yes, folks, that's right. P-I-S-G-A-H, Pisgah Forest, North Carolina. They'd also like to increase their power to 10 kilowatts. And 1540 KSVZ, Fort Worth, Texas, wants to change their city of license to University Park, Texas. Down to otherness on 680 WJYL in Newburgh, Kentucky. Target date for this new station is April 1989. On 850 WUTK, Knoxville, Tennessee, this facility is back on the air. With this call, WIVK was here. They moved to 990, leaving 850 open, and now the new station, WUTK, operated by the university in Knoxville, is on the air. On 1230 KOZA, Odessa, Texas, silent station is back on the air. 1380 KCKO, Spokane, Washington. Interesting story here. The FCC has ordered the station to show cause why their license should not be revoked. They had permission to be silent, but that permission ran out on the 15th of August, 1985. The FCC recently visited the station for an inspection. They found that the towers and the transmitter building are gone. 1390 WFBL, Syracuse, New York. Station's been silent for several years. They have been noted back on the air relaying WKFM in Fulton, New York. This is only a test transmission. The station is, however, expected to officially return to the air soon with the Music of Your Life format. 1440 WSLE, Bremen, Georgia. Silent station is back on the air. Also in 1440 WPRZ, Paris, Kentucky, here's another show cause order issued by the commission. The FCC has ordered the station to show cause why their license should not be revoked. They never requested permission or notified the FCC that they were going silent. They just did that on their own. The station has been off the air since November 1987, so the commission is looking at either a $20,000 fine or possibly pulling the license. We'll let you know what happens on that one. Finally, on 1600 WWCC, formerly WDH, in Honesdale, Pennsylvania. This station is still silent, but that new call letter was requested only a couple weeks ago, so it looks like someone is going to be reactivating that facility. And that will about do it for another edition of AM Switch from the pages of the National Radio Club's DX News.
Say, Jerry, Fred, if it's okay with you, could I just step in for a second here?
Oh, why, it's a travelogue editor and a former presidential candidate and ex-center for the Lakers, John Bowker. What's up, John?
I would like to ask a question of Jerry Starr before he has to run.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, John. Shoot.
Jerry, more and more as I travel around the country and as subscribers to the DX Audio Service try to record top-of-the-hour IDs for the DX Audio Service, we're finding that stations are not giving legal IDs, legal station breaks, you know, the call sign followed by the city with what, the frequency or the name of the licensee thrown in between sometimes.
I've heard
they are simply giving a call letter and going right into the news or whatever. You're in radio management. Why wouldn't a station jump at the chance to identify with the city and maybe with their frequency along with their call letters? There must be a reason why they don't do this.
Well, that's a real good question, John, and I wish I had a real good answer, but I don't. The FCC has not changed the regulations regarding station identification despite the recent trend toward deregulation. Stations are still required to identify by their call letter and city of license hourly. By the way, frequency and other information like that hasn't been required for a number of years, but you do need the call letter and the official city of license. Putting aside the promotional advantages of getting the call letters on the air as much as possible, I would think the primary reason for stations giving the required legal ID is because it's the law, and there's a potential for getting fined or cited by the commission. But I think the sad reality is, though, that I can't remember the last time I saw a station being fined for improper identification procedures. Now, keep in mind the FCC is woefully understaffed, and they seem to spend what time they devote to broadcast monitoring looking for what you might call more serious violations, such as off-frequency or overpower operations or perhaps over-modulation. There was a time when the citations for overmodulation, excessive power, and ID violations were pretty much commonplace, but it's been a number of years since that happened. It's not that the violations don't still occur, it's just that the FCC seems inclined to look the other way, or more likely not look at all. Really, of all the things a station can do wrong, failure to properly ID is probably the most harmless. It doesn't really hurt anything except the feeling of us DXers. It doesn't cause harmful interference to other stations, like off-frequency operation, for example. So failure to identify is basically one of those victimless crimes. It's a violation that evidently is at the very bottom of the FCC's priority list, but still it is required by law, and all stations should follow the correct procedures. Well, there have been cases in the past when a station is licensed to a suburban community and would like to play that fact down as much as possible. But a number of years ago, the FCC permitted the mentioning of other cities served in the hourly ID as long as the city of license is the one that's mentioned first. I think the trend toward AM simulcasting FM stations has entered into this problem, John. More often than not hearing any ID, I've noticed AM stations with FM legal IDs on them only. Many times in the case when the AM and the FM calls are different, the FM call is given only. This is probably just an oversight, which is a nice word for sloppy management, as the station's first love and interest is usually always anymore its FM facility. I can envision that often the existence of the AM station is literally forgotten by the programming people. You couple this with the sad fact that a large percentage of DJs and air people have next to no knowledge about the rules and regulations anymore. I'll bet that if you took 100 DJs and announcers and asked them what the regulation is concerning legal IDs, probably 90 of them wouldn't have any idea or would have a wrong idea. That's sad, but it's probably true. It's up to management to see that the air staff knows what is required and to see that it's done properly. So we're back to sloppy management again. It's a combination of lack of knowledge or concern on the part of management and lack of enforcement by the FCC. I might mention, by the way, that our friends to the north, the Canadian stations, are not required to give hourly IDs, so it's pretty much standard practice for many of them to go hours and hours without a standard call letter and location ID that we've come to know down here. And unfortunately, I can see a time in the not-too-distant future when the FCC will probably make a move in this direction, too. It will definitely be a black day for DXers, but I can see it coming over the horizon. At least that's the way it looks from here, John.
Well, it's funny, isn't it, that the FCC lowers the boom on some stations with so little mercy in some cases. And yet on something like this that would be a real service to the public, they don't seem to pay any attention. Yeah. I just don't understand. Thanks a lot, Jerry.
Sure.
Fred, I guess the ball's back in your court.
Okay, thank you very much, John. And Jerry, thanks for a great AM switch column. And maybe, gentlemen, what we should do is open this up for discussion. To you, the membership, how do you feel about the station IDs or lack of station IDs? And what is your recommendation? Give us a call on the Action Line, area code 419-224-3916. That's area 419-224-3916. And let us know how you feel about station legal IDs. One of the people that you don't normally hear from on the DX audio service is the gentleman who reads the Braille letters, which you send to me here at the DX audio service. His name is Bob Ulm. Bob is the operations manager for a station nearby Lima in Delphus, Ohio, by the call sign of WDOH-FM. And Bob recently asked me to relay this information, which we'll put on the DX exchange here, and that is that he has a ICOM 720A, and he's having some problem in picking up the AM broadcast, and apparently there's a little trick to doing that. Well, if you happen to have that information and would like to get in touch with Bob and tell him how to receive AM broadcasts on an ICOM 720A, his phone number is area code 419-692-3963. Or you can call their Lima, Ohio phone number, which is area code 419-642-3501. And Bob is on the air in the morning, so the best time to usually reach him is between 9 and noon weekdays.
You've wanted them, you've asked for them, now they are here, the WNRC Sculpt Cassettes. These air checks have the music cut down, but you can still hear the professional warmth and comedy of Milwaukee's number one convention station. WNRC was only on the air for 2 days, but you can hear it forever just by ordering your own Sculpt versions. Each order contains 4 C90 cassettes in a vinyl notebook and is sent first-class mail to you in 4 to 6 weeks from the date of order. Send $9.95 in check or money order to the National Radio Club Publication Center. Again, that's $9.95 to the National Radio Club Publication Center, Post Office Box 164, Mansville, New York, 13661.
WNRC Music Power.
I'm talking with Ernie Cooper at the 1988 National Radio Club Convention. Ernie, how are you?
Well, I'm pretty good, thanks, Fred.
Glad to see you came out here to Brewtown to share a few brews with us.
Sounds like you had a couple.
It's been a long day. Traffic through Chicago can be something else trying to get here. Ernie, I'd like to ask you a few questions about DXing. Many of the members to the audio service are just now getting into DXing, and some of them have kind of played in the hobby but have not really gotten serious with it. I guess the biggest question is, when you're sitting at home and you go over to your radio and turn it on, how do you know it might be a good night for DX?
Well, I try to decide which way the signals are coming from, whether they're coming from the west or from the south or from the north. We don't have anything coming from the east where I live because I live right on the east coast. And the exception to that would be if European stations are coming in, which is doesn't happen as often as you would expect.
Yeah, like, for example, what would you compare, say, WBT in Charlotte against some other station that's on the same frequency, or would you compare different frequencies?
I would compare different frequencies, because WBT, for that particular example you gave, seems to me they're always strong, no matter what the conditions are.
Okay, let's take, for example, 800. Okay, now, where I live, the CKLW is heard often. PJB will be in there sometimes, and there's been nights when PJB has obliterated CKLW, and I kind of take that to mean that it's a good night for Southern DX. What's your rule of thumb? I mean, what do you use as a criteria?
Well, that's a good example, but right alongside there, for instance, on 810 on WGY, if you're getting a Spanish language station in the background, it's a pretty good night for the South.
What would be the 810 there?
I believe it's a station in Venezuela. I'm not sure of that now. There might be WKVM in Arecibo, Puerto Rico. Probably one night it'll be one night it'll be the other.
Now, does the skip tend to come from different directions, or is it pretty well one direction during one time of the season?
No, it doesn't seem to go by season. But when there's an auroral condition prevailing, that is when the number counted in the WWV is up high. Usually then you have conditions where the southern signals are coming in, and western and northern and eastern are just obliterated, except for local stations. And then you have just a wide open field. Maybe stations 500 or more miles to the south will be coming in, or stations in between that area are not heard at all.
A while ago, I was talking to some members here at the convention. I was making mention about a time when I was working at a station up in Detroit, and I was like 4 miles from their transmitter site, and a station in Frostburg, Maryland, just went right over top of them. Has this ever happened to you, where a local signal, a WBZ or a WHDH, would be completely wiped out by another signal?
Not really the station of that power, but for instance, on 1260, where WEZE in Boston is 5,000 watts, when they go in their directional pattern at night, they become pretty well obliterated on a good night, and several stations interfere with them. Mostly American signals, and possibly CIHI in Fredericton, New Brunswick.
Okay, and as far as listening for DX, what is kind of your old trick of the trade as far as hearing that stuff and pulling it out of the rumble?
Oh, boy. Well, I try my best to remember what some of the stations sound like in the normal announcers' voices, and try to remember commercials I hear and types of music the stations play. If I hear something different, I say, well, maybe there's something here that makes it worthwhile staying and finding out who this is. And I try just to follow that signal.
Does the geographics of the station, as far as if you were listening to a station, all of a sudden you heard them talk about, say, rocky coast weather, I mean, would that be something which would spark your interest and cause you to stay on the dial?
It certainly would. I've heard that particularly on FM, when you hear things like that, where they talk about the Bay of Fundy or something like that, and you know very well that's not a local station. So the first thing I do is reach for the logbook, and then the next thing I do is keep my ears open, trying to get some IDs on the station.
Hey, just offhand, how many stations do you think, between the time we talked to you about 2 years ago, and you said you started DXing in Brooklyn when you were just a child, between then and now, about how many stations do you think you've ever heard?
Well, I've verified 4,253, I think the count is, on the AM band. And that does include call changes. I count a station over on the call changes, but I do not count it if it changed frequency.
Well, that's kind of odd, isn't it? I mean, like, for example, in Toledo, you got four or five call-unders on 1520, but if you change frequency, you don't go after them again. Wouldn't that be counted as another facility?
I guess it would, but I look at it this way. This is the station's name. Your name is Fred Vobey. If you move somewhere else, you're still Fred Vobey. So.
I can see how that would work. The FM totals. About how many FMs you think you've heard?
One more and I have 500. I was hoping to have it before I got here, but I'm still at 499.
Will WNRC FM count or not?
Well, I haven't heard them at home. That's the only place it counts.
Do you ever get into any shortwave or TV DXing?
No, I don't have any shortwave facilities. My Hamerlin HQ180 will tune to the shortwave, but since I'm using a broadcast band loop antenna, I would have to disconnect it and put some other kind of antenna on there to get under the shortwave band, which to me is a nuisance. Anything that involves anything even semi-technical, I try to avoid. So, and as far as TV is concerned, usually it's only channels 2 through 6, which are productive, and we have locals on all but one of those channels. Channel 3 would be the only place to have any chance of getting anything. And when there is this e-skip, it seems to be just a jumble. A funny whistle occurs, and you hear several stations talking and several pictures in and out, and you just can't seem to make heads or tails out of any of it. So I've never done any TV DX.
So broadcast band DXing is really your true love.
Yes. Well, FM is becoming my second true love in the summertime.
Now, with 4,000 stations, is there really one more to be had?
I think so. I think there's a few more out there, and we're going to be looking for them as soon as my receiver comes back from the repair shop.
Ernie, I'd like to thank you for talking with us here on the audio service, and wish you well, and hope to see you next year.
Well, thanks so much, Fred, and I've met some of the fellows from the audio service, and I'm sure impressed with them. They certainly know what they're talking about, and they're doing some great DXing. This is a great service you're running.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And Ernie Cooper at the National Radio Club Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, held over Labor Day in 1988. And I guess we should make mention that the 1989 National Radio Club Convention will be held in Topeka this year over Labor Day weekend. So be sure to put those shekels aside and stuff them greens back in your jeans, and you're not going to want to miss the 1989 National Radio Club Convention in Topeka, Kansas, home of such notables as Dorothy and Toto and Paul Swearingen. Hope to see you there. It's time now to take a look at the Domestic DX Digest column with our good friend Bill Hale.
Thanks, Fred, and hello, everyone. This issue will bring you up to date on the latest medium wave happenings as reported in Domestic DX Digest and DX News, Volume 56, Issues 17 through 21. First, a special note. Wendell Ford is offering air checks for KMPC 710 or KJR 950 off a satellite feed. Just send him a blank cassette with return postage and specify what you want to hear. Air check time is 2300 to 0300 Eastern Listening Time. Wendell's address is 805 North 625 East, Westville, Indiana, 46391-9403. Wendell also reports hearing a news story on WGN that one of KCBS's towers was toppled by high winds. Maybe we'll hear more on that later. Now into the loggings. First, special programming notes. Charles Ray of Leamington, Ontario, reports that WACY 1160 in Fenton, Michigan, changed call letters on January 10th and now IDs as Wacky Radio, while still programming country and western. WACY is now owned by Dino Day, who does the afternoon shift, as well as continuing with his morning shift on CKMR-FM in Windsor. George Vanish of Trucksville, Pennsylvania, reports that the new WYOM 1340 in Wilkes-Barre IDs as the new Wyoming Valley Country Radio and carries Boston Celtics basketball. Ed Janis of Bricktown, New Jersey, reports hearing the 1430 outlet in Newark, New Jersey, ID several times as WNKR instead of WNJR, as is listed in all the NRC references. My log says WNJR, too. Maybe Jerry Starr can help us clear this up. Two NRC member-arranged tests were well heard. The WASG test was heard by Wendell Ford, and the WBET test was reported by Rick Dow while in Chicago, Bob Harrison of Union, New Jersey, and also Wendell Ford. Skipping ahead to issue 18 while we're talking about this WBET test, it was reported by Robert Kramer of Chicago, William Townsend of Washington, D.C., and Eric Buneman of Woodstock, Georgia. WBET should get a lot of reports. Frank Merrill of Macomb, Illinois, has a couple of 1,200-foot long wires working overtime. He bagged KVNA 690 Flagstaff, Arizona on December 1st at 0606 Eastern Listening Time with a mention of the Grand Canyon in the weather report, followed by the Flagstaff temperature and AM-FM ID. The signal was poor to fair with CBF also in there. Frank also heard a couple of stations on 1550, one being a WCCZ of New Smyrna Beach, Florida. He logged that on December 9th at 05:53 hours on their 83-watt night signal with Rock Oldies, and he heard WOKJ in Jackson, Mississippi on December 12th. Frank mentions hearing WOKJ playing country music and asks when did they make that change. They've been an urban contemporary station for a couple of decades. Later noted and amused by Eric Buneman in Issue 19, it seems the owners of WJMI-FM sold WOKJ-AM and bought WOAD 1400, so I guess that accounts for the changes on the 1550 outlet in Jackson. The relatively new CKLQ 880 in Brandon, Manitoba has made it well into the upper Midwest, having been heard by Rick Dowell in Chicago and by Doug Smith of Madison, Wisconsin. The loggings were on January 2nd between 56 past midnight and 0220 with old country and western favorites and the slogan Q Country heard along with definite IDs. This was also reported in issue 18 by Robert Kramer. Moving along to issue 18 special notes, first from Eric Buneman of Woodstock, Georgia, WGST 920 Atlanta has sold its facility to Dr. James Dobson. That's in preparation for WGST's move to 640. Robert Tierra of Hendersonville, North Carolina, reports getting a verification from WJLS 560, Beckley, West Virginia, from a May 1988 report. He received a very fancy card from them and suggests this may be a good time to send your report to them. His QSL went to the chief engineer. Carl Jeter of Stone Mountain, Georgia, reports hearing a pirate station, which was most likely the one out of Pittsburgh, on 1620 in the early morning hours of January 15th. They were playing adult-oriented rock and saying, "This is WKND, commercial free radio. We're on the air now and broadcasting from our studio headquarters." Incidentally, this WKND has been heard widely in the East for 2 or 3 months now. A couple of notable loggings from issue 18 include KBHB 810 Sturgis, South Dakota, which was heard by Rick Dow of Oakland, Iowa. He heard them on January 20th from 1836 to 1844. The signal was good in an ultra-tight KCMO null. Rick heard a promo for the KBHB Saturday morning auction, the weather, music by John Connolly and the Oak Ridge Boys. They announced a power cut at 1844, mentioning listeners who would be losing their signal, and a KRCHFM 93.1 invite. This is a very interesting, as the NRC log says they have no nighttime authorization. Possibly someone from the Sturgis area can verify their nighttime operation. Well, 1030 seems to be the most widely heard frequency in issue 18. Eric Buneman heard WNOW Mint Hill, North Carolina on January 6th at 1659. Fair and alone on the frequency with contemporary Christian music, and this is WNOW Mint Hill Charlotte ID into CBN News. KCTA Corpus Christi, Texas was reported by Robert Kramer on January 2nd at 1858 with their sign-off, and George Santulli of Leesburg, Virginia heard them sign-off on January 12th at 1900 after a religious program. The signal was over WBZ. George also heard WOSO San Juan, Puerto Rico on the channel on January 12th with a clear ID after Larry King at 2359 Eastern Time, looping WBZ out. Rick Dow reports hearing WXSS Memphis, Tennessee on January 10th at 2230 with soul music and an ID. The better music station, WXSS Memphis, Tennessee. For Rick, as was Memphis number 3 heard and number 12 from the Volunteer State. Our final 1030 logging was made by Rick Dow. He logged KTWO Casper, Wyoming on January 16th at 1206, hearing this ID from the real country in Wyoming. This is AM 1030 KTWO. It was followed by Loretta Lynn music. Rick comments it was a real midday shocker at 530 miles. Issue 19 was a rather small column compared with the recent editions, but nonetheless contained some excellent loggings and tips. Another special note from Robert Tierra of Hendersonville, North Carolina, who logged the new WUTK 850 in Knoxville on January 20th at 1427, carrying CBS, CNN, Tennessee Network, and Financial News Network with an all-news format. Their slogan is All News 850. Robert heard them on January 20th, once again at 1420 hours. Wally Warro of Garland, Texas, heard some DX, which about 3 years ago wouldn't have been considered such. But on January 8th, he logged WBZ at 0105 with the signal just above the Arkansas, Missouri, and Memphis stations on 1030. He heard the Norm Nathan talk show intro and a phone number. And if that wasn't bad enough, KTWO was in that morning, too. Wally says it's the first time in about 3 years that BZ has been heard in his North Texas DX shack. Wally also reported KTBT 700 in Tomball, Texas, in at 2322 on the 11th of January for about 45 minutes in a tight WLW null. KTBT was carrying the Sports Byline USA Sports Talk Show via satellite out of San Francisco. Their phone number is 1-800-421-PLAY. They're a BRN, that's a Business Radio Network affiliate, and a tough catch under WLW. For those of you who would like to contribute to DDXD but don't know exactly how to format your data for the column, just send me a self-addressed stamped envelope and a note stating you received the DX audio service only, and I'll send you a sample of what the column looks like. My address is 2160 Farm to Market Road, Johnson City, New York, 13790-9520. Until next time, this is Bill Hale for the DX audio service.
And thank you very much, Bill. And Bill will be back with us on the next edition of the DX Audio Service with more of your tips and also loggings on the Domestic DX Digest column. Well, Mr. Terribly Tough Trivia, I can count one. How many are there?
All right, so it's too easy. But anyway, the two stations alphabetically are Waco, Texas, WACO, and Ware, Massachusetts, WARE. If that was too easy, you know, I'm sitting here looking at this glorious National Geographic map of the United States, Fred. I'll bet nobody can tell me what radio station, beginning with a letter W, is the furthest west in the United States. Well, I'd make a trivia question. Let me give you the answer. I'm telling you it's WNAX in Yankton. I accept arguments because that one I haven't researched thoroughly, and the NRC logbook doesn't quite give me geographic coordinates. But if I look north and south, I see BAP down there and WACO in Texas, and I see NAX, and I think NAX is further west by about a 16th of an inch on my map. What would that make it, a mile and a half? I don't know. If anybody thinks they have a better answer, let me have it. And I guess I mean that with both barrels. Okay, Fred, and that's enough for now.
Okay, John. I was thinking about Van Wert. That's not right, is it? Okay. Anyways, part two of the DX Audio Service is up and coming, so stay tuned.